Okay, by way of introduction to our first guest this morning, I found I wanted to listen to this song. Wonderful World is a duet with Vincent Gill and our upcoming guest, Tommy Fleming.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see the skies of blue, the clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The color of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of the people passing by. I see friends shake his head, saying, how do you do? I hear babies cry, and I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I say to myself, what a wonderful world.
My first wrist night this morning on the show, and executive producer tells me this duet is with Vince Gill, not Vincent. Oh, sorry about that, Vince. Yeah. We're linking with Tommy Fleming.
The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of the people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies crying, and I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
What better way to introduce and link up with Tommy Fleming? Tommy, you're very welcome to the program.
Hi, Adrian. It's great to talk to you, and thanks for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome indeed. You know, they're during the week here, we did play a couple of your songs last week, and I said that you were from Mayo, and Sligo people, some of them anyway. You know how Sligo people are. They're wonderful, wonderful people, all of it, but they have a talent with snotty emails, I have to tell you that. And said, no, he's not.
Well, I suppose sometimes when I'm working abroad, it's easier for me to just say I'm Irish.
Yeah.
Because I'm claimed by Mayo, I'm claimed by Dublin, because I lived in Dublin for many years, and my second home is in Dublin.
Yeah.
I'm from Sligo. We'll get that straight out. And I've been born, I was reared in Sligo. And the funny thing is, I'm back living in Sligo, just up the road from Inniscrone. I'm right on the border of Mayo and Sligo. So I guess I have my foot in both counties.
Yeah. Well, now you're getting a bit cute there because I noticed you threw in the Dublin part, so, you know, that's kind of a bad word on this program today. Anyway.
Yeah, I know. I've been clever, I suppose, but not that clever.
That's all right. You have a foot in each county there, too. But
yeah,
anyway,
I have, actually.
But you are in Enniscorna, a beautiful seaside resort. And indeed you are. You're smack on the border there. You're halfway between Ballina and Enniscrone, which, as I say, I would imagine you will bring to our attention after the All-Ireland final tomorrow, but we'll keep our fingers crossed.
Please, God, I don't want to jinx it by saying anything, you know, but who knows? You'd never know. It could come west again.
It could come west, and let's hope it does. Now, let me ask you about your own career. And I suppose the hashtag of Voice of Ireland, tongue-in-cheek there, but that makes it easier to encompass what many have a problem with, like how would you describe your music, your type of music?
Do you know what, Adrian? Since I've been doing this, and my first recording was 26 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and I've never actually been able to answer that question or just with a definite answer. The music I do is, I suppose, it's contemporary, it's Irish, it's ballads, but I've always said that, you know, if a song is presented to me and I like the song, and once it's got a great melody and a great story, I'll do it. And it's the same when it comes to writing songs. I was described, I think, once by, was it the Boston Globe? It was the Boston Globe, as the Irish Josh Groban, which was a great compliment, but a bit kind of left to centre. I'm not in a niche, that's the thing, and maybe that works to my advantage or maybe it's a disadvantage. I actually don't know, but it is what it is, and I love doing the music I do, and thank God it has been very successful for me so far.
Now, let's back up a little bit, though. The village of Eclair in County Sligo, and it is a beautiful village, and we all, we have indeed some great affiliations there. My sister-in-law, Frances Curran. The Curran family, and many of the others, the McAllisters, many of the people who drifted this direction and many of them stayed at home. Tell us about growing up in Eclair and perhaps your first singing engagement, as it were.
As it were, it was, you know, it's funny, things come full circle, Adrian, because growing up in Eclair, I felt very confined, and as a teenager especially, I wanted nothing faster than to get out of there, and as most teenagers are like, and get out to a big city or, you know, break into the big bad world. And now I'm middle-aged, I'm 47, I love nothing more than being in the peace and quiet of it, or, you know, but growing up there, to be cliched, I have to say it was idyllic. I'm the youngest of six, and we're like steps of stairs, all six of us, because there's a year and something between all of us. And my mother, God rest her, claimed she was about 8 years pregnant. So we grew up on a farm with very little money, very self-sufficient. And that's how it was so idyllic, I suppose. And that those traits have stood to me in today's life. You know, I live in a lovely area of Castle Connor towards Enniscrone, and mm-hmm. you know, I have a little vegetable patch, I have the garden, and I'm kind of I'm becoming my father, I think. But going back to the question, Eclair, it still is a great place. I visit it very regularly. Right beside it is Loch Talf, the amazing lake. The mountains are right beside it too, right behind it really, where I take the dog sometimes for a walk when I go up home. There's great memories there. I have great, great, great memories, and you know, it's, some of them are sad. I think they're nostalgically sad, And that's life, I suppose. But it was it was one place that kind of it forged and I suppose forged what I do. And you know, when you say my first singing engagement, this is the God's honest truth. When one of my jobs, as the Americans would say, your chores, was we had a dairy farm, so it was milking of the cows. So morning and evening, mainly evening for me, my older brother Pat would do it in the mornings. And I would go into the dairy shed and turn on the milking machine. And it would take me about 2.5 hours, whereas it would take somebody else maybe an hour and a half. and I would sing from beginning of that chore to the end of it, because the acoustics were amazing. And I learned a lot of the older songs that I still sing to this day, like Skibbereen, The Isle of Inishfree, The West Awake, all of those old songs that I learned as a kid. They're still there, and they were forged in that cow shed. That's the God's honest truth. But one of my first public engagements was in a pub called Caulfield's Bar in Athlare, with my uncle Tony Howley, who was playing saxophone and flute in a band, kind of a jazz, kind of traditional trio. And I remember I was 14, and it was my first paid gig as such. I went up on the stage to sing The Isle of Inishfree, and I was so scared and so nervous, I actually turned my back to the audience. And that, to this day, never left my mind. So that was my first foray into the business that I'm in today.
Yeah. Now, you were doing a charity event in Westport back in, now that's, God, that's 25 years ago.
It's 1990, June of 93.
Yeah, okay. And Phil Coulter, Ireland's Phil Coulter, he didn't know you were there, and he definitely hadn't hired you, but he heard you, and he took you to indeed a great, if into a world of exposure before indeed you went solo yourself. But tell us about that event and Phil Coulter, who I'm sure, did you know he was there? Did you know he was?
I didn't know he was there. It was in Westport. It was in the Tower Bar in Westport, and there was a marquee out the back. And I remember it really well because it was June and it was freezing cold. It was a horrible night. And I was in a band called Jarrog, spelled J-A-R-R-O-G,
yes,
which was the phonetic for Jarrog, which is red in Irish.
Yeah.
And I was up singing, and I remember I sang Jimmy McCarthy's As I Leave Behind Nadine.
Yes.
And after we finished our set, and I came down and I was standing at the bar, and Phil introduced himself. And I knew who he was, obviously. And he wanted to get my contact details to contact me the next day. So I gave him, there was no mobiles at the time or cell phones. So I gave him I was living in an apartment in Castlebar in County Mayo. So I gave him the phone number. And I came back, I was gone the next day doing stuff. And I came back and there was a message left from Phil. And I rang him back. And he invited me to join his orchestra of a tour of Ireland, which took in the National Concert Hall, the Cork Opera House, the University Concert Hall in Limerick, the Ulster Hall in Belfast. And there were these amazing venues, like 2,000 seats plus. And you have to remember, I was a 22-year-old kid who basically was very, very naive, very green, and only used to singing in bars and clubs where they were noisy and smoky and I was kind of thrown very much into the deep end. So I went from there to singing, standing in front of 2,000 people. And from there, he took me to the States for my very first trip to the States in November and December of 93. And on the 1st of December, I stood for the first time on the stage in Carnegie Hall. That was kind of, I always call that my birthplace, because that's what gave me the incentive and the drive, the ambition to do what I do today and to kind of keep the music going and keep new things moving.
Boston Symphony Hall, obviously, in touring.
Massey Hall in San Francisco. I can never remember the hall. It was one, there was one in Philadelphia. There was a revolving stage, and you had to get off at the letter S when you're seeing it up at the far side of the auditorium. And of course, me being me, I couldn't see it properly, so I thought the E was the F. So I got off at E, and I was walking all the way around the auditorium after my song to try and get up back to the dressing room. So they're all the kind of memories that I've always had, you know.
Canada, that you wouldn't, then Australia, New Zealand, Austria, Japan, taking your music and heading to places around the world, which having, it was a good job in hindsight that you actually showed up, you know, at the gig where Phil Coulter happened to be.
It was, and you know, I went from working with Phil in 93, and I was kind of jumping, I was working in two camps, as it were, and I got a phone call from Frankie Gavin and Alex Finn from De Donnan in January of 1994. And it was a mutual friend of ours, Adrian, Maggie Cadden from New York.
Absolutely, Scotland,
Set the meeting up. So I did a UK tour with De Donnan and a few shows in France. And then Phil had been taking a break for 94, so I went off and worked with De Donnan. And I toured Europe, all over Europe, which took in Austria, as you mentioned, Belgium, France, the Netherlands. And then we moved on down to Hong Kong, Japan, then down to Australia, New Zealand, back from New Zealand to France. And I still remember that journey because we went from France, from Paris to Chicago and Chicago to Milwaukee. And that was my first time doing the Milwaukee Irish Fest in 94. So it's, you know what, I always say that my job has become one of the best passports I could ever have. I gained so much experience from both Phil and from De Donnan. As the lead singer with De Donnan and the fronter of the orchestra for Phil, I learned so much.
But you were in good company, too, when you take great entertainers like Mary Black, and you know, several of the others, Dolores Keane. You were in good company.
Yeah. I was in great company, and you know, I was so much aware. I was so very aware of De Donnan and Frankie, and I was more aware really of De Donnan than I was of Phil, because I kind of had, sure. I was a fan of Mary's, and I was a fan of Dolores Keane's and Maura O'Connell's, and I loved the music that they did.
Yeah.
So I went from there to, you know, learning great songs, learning a great stagecraft. And, you know, it was a great compliment to be known as the next one of the singers of De Donnan and been in that company. It was a huge honor, and it was a great, great, it was a great thing to be on my resume.
Now, so you're coming back to us, and we might as well, get a plug in here too.
And we should.
You're coming on October 1st.
I'm coming on October 1st. I'm performing in the City Winery downtown.
Yeah.
Which is on Barrack Street, I think.
Yes.
It's an unusual tour for me because normally we do concert halls and theaters, but this time I'm doing a kind of a City Winery tour in the U.S. of New York, Chicago, Boston, Nashville, and Atlanta.
Yeah.
So it's a gorgeous venue. I've been in it a few times as a punter and as an audience member. So we decided to come over and do some shows in the wineries.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a really kind of laid back, very kind of an evening with type of show. And it's just something different, I suppose.
It definitely is, and to hit all of those cities, and this is kind of a whistle stop tour as well. For instance, you're in the winery here in New York for one night only.
Yes.
And we should give you know, let's give the telephone number anyway for the winery, which is 212-608-0555. Or you can get buy tickets, I guess, your information at citywinery, onewordcom. But I'd like to direct people actually to your own website, Tommy. There are many stories there, everything from newsletters to albums. 3 million albums sold, and about 5 million hits on YouTube. And actually, I'm way up there with you as well. We got 2 hits on YouTube already this morning, but they didn't last long. They kind of must have gotten the wrong thing. Tell us about... The album's 3 million, staggering. That puts you, for an Irish entertainer, if there's anybody close to that number, they're doing okay as well. But tell us about the significance of YouTube and how that has, say, propelled your career, or has it?
It has. I suppose with the advent of social media, for want of a better word, with Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, Tumblr, whichever you're using, if you're using all of them, as somebody that kind of came from the age of just buying a CD, it's a huge thing to embrace for in our generation, I suppose. But it's the way forward, unfortunately or fortunately, yeah. But it is the way forward. You know, CDs, as you can probably know, record shops closed by the dozens in the mid thousands. You know, and you know you have to kind of find another way to push your music and to push your career and push your profile. So the only way forward was to do, you know, get onto the social media network, and it works. You know, I mean, I see some people have, like, you know, 5,000 followers, 6,000 followers, whatever it may be, and it's a great advertising tool, Adrian, as you probably know yourself from your own business. And you have to really be on top of that. You have to be part of that. Otherwise, you don't get the recognition, I suppose, is the best word to look for. You don't get the recognition you should if you're in the business.
Well, I think for most people, again, through social media, which I still refer to as the internet, because I'm only, you know, I'm finally accepting that this bloody internet can be either good or bad. But if you're not on that train, you're going nowhere.
You're going to fall behind if you're not. And yes, it's got its downfalls, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And the one thing, I suppose, that like most people that are in, that know social media, the one thing that we all don't like about it is what we call the trolls, and you know that, you know, people with the opinion that they can sit at the desk and be quite vitriolic about it and be very vicious in their opinions of people, opinions of me, whoever. But yeah,
I understand perfectly. I mean, I just happened to mention you were from Mayo after we chatted, and we know so many people there. And you want to talk about, ooh.
Well, I suppose that's, in fairness, that's kind of, that's patriotism of a county wanting to accept one of their own and boast, you know, push one of their own. I would never have a problem with that. But when you've got somebody giving a major opinion on something that you might wear on TV, or, you know, that you might have a few pounds on, or whatever it might be. Unless you have a very thick skin, and you really believe you need a thick one, it's very hard to take sometimes, and some people find it very difficult.
Yeah, well, if you were in my side of the microphone here, your thick skin would have to be about a foot deep. but that's all right. And you know, this is tongue in cheek, obviously, but when we got the first couple of emails saying, Sligo, he's not Mayo and all the rest of it, I I wanted for a split minute anyway what I wanted to do was say, listen, if you were that smart, you'd be in the All-Ireland next Sunday. But I thought to myself, geez, I may not jinx it. So I very nicely have backed off it. Tell us about some of the in-between times from, you know, from singing for a couple of hours in the cowshed while doing your job and doing your chores, up to meeting Phil Coulter. What kind of gigs and how did that sit with you, the interim there? How is that?
I didn't know any different. It was, you know, you survived, you kept going. It was extra few quid on top of whatever job you had. And, you know, I was still in school. My first professional gig really was at 15. I was playing at the time you could, and I played guitar as well, not very well, so I very rarely played live. But I bought myself a small PA.
Mm-hmm.
I won a talent competition where I won £1,000 at the time. We were still in the pounds at those days.
Yeah.
And I bought a PA system with the money. And from there, I went out and I was doing pub gigs, which were the only shows or gigs I knew. And, you know, played. My dad or my older brother would bring me to the gig because I couldn't drive. I could drive, but I was too young to have a license. And they would bring me to on a Friday or a Saturday night, and I'd do my gig. And then I would be back in school on Monday morning. And I never really thought about it in that sense. It was, you know, you might get 30 quid or 40 quid for pounds for your 2 hours or your 3 hours. And that was a lot of money, you know. That was, for a 15-year-old, that was quite a substantial amount of money. And a little bit of it went to my mom and dad. And, you know, that ploughed the field ahead of me. And it gave me a great, training, actually. It was my induction. And it was my internship to be where I am on a bigger stage today.
But I wanted to say though that, you know, there you want to be talk about being thrown into the deep end of the pool, playing in a bar, playing in a pub, where you're only feet away from, you know, from those who, in the middle of your song, might ask you to sing another song or something else.
Yeah.
You want to talk about tough skin. That's about as tough as you can get, you know.
You have to keep it. I mean, as a kid, I suppose you don't pay much attention to it. I remember once, and unfortunately I'm going to have to use the word, so if you have a 7-second delay, you might need to use it here.
Right.
I was in a bar in Swin. I was playing in a pub in Swinford in County Mayo, which is only up the road from Atlair.
Right.
And it was coming to close to Christmas, and I was singing, I always remember I was singing the song, Will You Go, Lassie Go, and I was sitting on my stool, singing away, singing my heart out. And this guy and his wife, really well-built, kind of imposing-looking dude, came towards me, and I thought, oh, he's going to ask me to play a request or, you know, to do some other song, and that'll be, you know, everybody will come in and they'll be listening to me, and I just dream in my head. And he comes up to me, stops me from playing the guitar, leans into me and says, come here, young fella. Do you know any other songs besides that shite? That's what you had to put up with. I suppose you just kind of went, oh, yeah, I do. And you, in some ways you did what you were told. Now you look at, you know, performers that you see, you know, young people coming up through the ranks, and you know it's social media, and it's, you know, the X Factor, or it's American Idol, or you know, all of those, you know, reality TV competitions, and they've got their place. If I was that age again, I'd probably be in one of them, you know. So it's, I suppose, things change and people move on, you know.
We're going to head over to Ireland to get the news, which means that I'll only be able to play a bit of a track from one of your songs, and you have hundreds of them, but the song I was going to play was Danny Boy, but we talked our way through that, and we will do that right.
I probably shouldn't have been talking so much.
I think there is a compliment that I would like to pass on to you, and I have, as you know, I have a great number of fans. I don't know who they are, but I have a number of critics that I meet along the way. This fella gave me kind of a thump on the arm. I was at an event, and he said, "Listen, if you're playing a song on the radio," he says, "and if we have to hear Danny Boy one more friggin' time, could you do it, and could you get Tommy Fleming to sing?" And I said, I'll see. Okay, now...
That's a great compliment, actually.
Yeah. So after the news, if we have to hear Danny Boy one more time, it will be by my guest Tommy Fleming. And again, friends, let's welcome you to New York. It is on October 1st. Again, 212-608-0555, citywinery.com. Give us your own website, Tommy, for those who would like to.
It's www.tommyfleming.com. Or my Facebook pages is Tommy Fleming Official. Or Twitter, Tom Flem Official. I know I sound like a young fella now with all my social media, but as we said earlier in the conversation, it's all part of it. The website is the main area. That's where you can contact us directly. I'm very hands-on. I don't have assistants or I have one manager, and that's my wife, Tina.
Yeah.
And we keep everything very much in-house.
Yeah, I've one of those too. I'm sorry for your trouble, but go ahead.
And I just, we keep everything very, I went through those times of managers and assistants, and at the end of the day, my dad, God rest him, used to always say, if you want a job done well, do it yourself. And I learned that very much the hard way. So as the years went on, I kind of started doing things my own way and doing my own job. And I find it much more rewarding and much more, it much means much more to me.
Good luck to you, and we look forward to catching you on this side of the Atlantic. Tommy Fleming, I think I'll throw out a teaser here. You'll only take a minute of a song. I won't play the rest of it afterwards. We'll start off with Danny Boy. But here's one of the songs that you made, you made famous. And that's
thanks a million, Adrian, and thank you so much for the support, and thanks to everyone for all the support over there.
Thank you. All right.
There's a song that will linger forever in our ears.